You're listening to The Bill Murphy Show, the daily music interview show featuring the best in the business. From behind the scenes, in the studio, and on the stage. Available by subscription for free on iTunes and at BillMurphyShow.com. Brought to you by Lulu's Bait Shack. Fresh Florida seafood and live music on A1A on world-famous Fort Lauderdale Beach. And now, here's your host, Bill Murphy.
And here is your new digital broadcast for this Wednesday, December 21st, 2011. Happy holidays, everybody. Merry Christmas. It's kind of this time of the week with Christmas on the weekend. It's like we're already in Christmas mode. We've all stopped doing everything, haven't we? And we're just rolling through. And if you're like me and in South Florida, you're just waiting for everybody to arrive from the cold north. So great show today that I've been anticipating for a long time, trying to hook up with this guy and share some great stories with you. It's another one of those shows that could go hours and hours, so I'm going to try to condense it into the time that we have. There are impressive discographies, and then there's the discography of Little Feat, a band of multiple eras stretching from 1969-ish to today, with some slight variations in the lineup. Paul Bearer remains part of the core that enjoyed most of the entire ride, and he joins me by telephone from California right now. How's it going, Paul?
Bill, it's going well. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. We're going to... I'm not done with your introduction here, because it could go on for hours. at least 15 studio albums, 12 live albums, I guess, at least. A bunch of box sets, compilations, most of which still sell today at a nice clip. The library is very accessible through iTunes, so if you're new to Little Feat, if you're from that younger generation, you can get on iTunes and like preview pieces of the songs, and then you'll just be buying them up like crazy. Their most recent live release, I think, unless there's been one since, is Ram's Head Revisited, recorded in the summer of 2010. They're hitting the Northeast U.S. December 30th through mid-January, followed by some Feat fan excursion dates in Jamaica in late January. Get show times and ticket info at littlefeat.net. All sound accurate to you, Paul?
Man, you did your homework.
A little bit. Yeah, well, you know, every once in a while, I just got, you gotta get back to Little Feat. And that's the thing. You guys have always been around for all these years. There's not many bands that can say they've been together as long as you have and pretty much had a solid core of at least four guys that have been there through the whole thing.
Yeah, it's true. You know, and just up until about a year and a half ago, there was five of us until Richie passed.
Right, of course, right.
But yeah, it's been pretty much the same group of guys, just, you know, hammering away on the tunes that span, what, six, five decades, something like that.
Yeah.
You know, a long time.
I know.
And
it's like getting ready to talk to somebody like you, knowing all that. It's a tough thing, because I'm trying to do 30, 40 minutes of a show here, and if we sat here like it was, you know, inside the musician's studio, and we go, well, then in 1974, you released Feats Don't Fail Me Now, and we went album by album, we'd be here all day, you know? So,
well, we might have to do a second one of these, you know?
All right, hey, I'm writing that down. Paul said part two, note to self. All right,
okay.
So what I'll do is I'll touch on some things here and there, and of course, you mentioned Richie already. I want to get into that in detail a little bit later on. But let's hear about you and your beginnings. I mean, some of the... I'm going to try not to ask you the typical, where are you guys headed out on the road questions? And just kind of... I want to go back to your childhood and when you first started. Now, you're an L.A. cat. You're a Southern California guy. And you're the... Let's not even talk about, like, the first band you played in. When was the first time you ever heard real music? And what were the first things you were listening to? The first record albums you bought as a young kid?
Wow, my first recollections of music was my father playing Dixieland jazz on an old hi-fi, and I was probably about five or six.
Wow.
And you know, there's something very infectious about about that Dixieland kind of stuff that I would always, you know, he put that stuff on, and I'd jump around the room like a crazy animal, you know.
Well, that obviously explains a lot, so...
But you're... And then the first record I ever bought, well, I was blessed. I had two older brothers, so they... you know, they got into the rock and roll, and so there I was, 11 years old, and I heard Little Richard doing Tutti Frutti.
Ooh.
So unbeknownst to my parents, I grabbed a dollar, and I went and got on the bus and rode down to Wallach's Music City, which was at Sunset and Vine,
uh-huh.
And bought the 78 of Tutti Frutti, got back on the bus, came home, and got a whooping for taking off like that. But what was, I had the record.
What was on the flip side? Do you remember?
Flipping and a sliding.
Oh, there you go. Very nice. Because all those flip sides were always gems, you know, that were, nobody ever really talked about.
Oh, I know. Unbelievable stuff.
And then, so around that time, when did you actually go, all right, I like this so much, I'm going to start playing it? And what instrument did you first pick up? Was it the guitar?
Well, actually, my parents, being musically oriented, had us, all of us, taking piano lessons from the time we were very young.
Mm-hmm.
And I was blessed with a really good ear, so I fooled everybody into thinking I was reading the stuff, and actually I'd have the teacher play it one time, and then I would go through the music, and, oh, that's that note, that's that note, that's that note.
Right.
And then I'd play it, you know. So I kept that ruse going until I was about 12, I guess.
Uh-huh.
And then my oldest brother was having a party, and a guy shows up with a Gibson guitar, and he's sitting in a corner playing Jimmy Reed songs, and every chick at the party was standing around him, and I went, ah, that's the instrument.
That's the key, right? Right there. Because everybody loves the guitar player.
Yeah, it was like, you know, it was one of those, oh, okay.
And
well, I'll get that guitar thing going.
When you hear about, you know, people that have made a living in the music industry and the great successes and the great heroes that we have, it's always curious to me, or I'm always curious to know, what point did you get to where you thought, okay, now you know what, this might be worth pursuing professionally. I might be actually good enough to get really good at this. There seems to be, that's a crossroads to me that fascinates me, because you know, you have self-doubt, you wonder whether you really are playing the thing or just faking it. Was there a point where you realized, you know what, this might be something I want to, take to the next level and master?
I was about 15, playing in garage bands, you know, and, just with kids my age and, covering songs by the Stones and what have you. But we were also real fortunate that the garage band that I played in had this kid playing drums. His name was Mark Vinegar. His father was Leroy Vinegar, who was the famous jazz bass player who played with the Jazz Crusaders, and he played with Les McCann and all that stuff. So he bought all these cool instruments, a Stratocaster with a basement amp and a bass amp for the guy who I convinced to quit playing the banjo and start playing the bass, and
uh-huh.
And Mark on drums.
Wow.
And we would spend our weekends in the garage just jamming. And I didn't know if that was going to be a career or not, but I did know that the feeling that you got from playing, from creating music or playing, was something that I wanted to continue for the rest of my life.
Right, right. That's very, very cool. And I mean, I guess there's a lot to be said about, I guess, the attention span that, you know, people had back there. I mean, you could spend an entire weekend and just jam and stay in that whole vibe for days at a time. I think that's something that's not really, people don't really go through these days, you know?
Hey, everything's way too instant now.
Exactly, right.
It's, things have sped up to the point now where I think people are chasing their own tails.
Now, again, in the effort of skipping around so that we can cover a lot of different things in a short amount of time, based kind of in that same subject, you were, you know, born and raised in Southern California, and I mean, a lot of the guys in the band are California cats. The sound of Little Feet is distinctively different than, you know, what would be, whatever would be the sound of California. Did you guys ever get mistaken, or do you still, from like being from Louisiana and being Cajun boys, and do people mistake you for that and just assume because of the sound of the music that you're from there?
Oh, all the time.
Wow.
We were forever called a Southern band, our stock answer was, well, we're from Southern California.
Yeah.
But I think it's really more of the taste in music that everybody had, you know, when we all got together. Like when Little Feet went from being a quartet to, and Roy Estrada left to join Captain Beefheart's band, and they brought in Kenny and Sam and myself, we kind of brought out that old rock and roll edge that was ingrained in Billy and Richie and Lowell.
Uh-huh.
Of that sort of slipping and sliding funky stuff, and
right,
you could tell the difference between Sailing Shoes, which was a brilliant record, very eclectic, very well produced, very spot on, but had so many different genres of music and so forth, to when we did Dixie Chicken, which was more straight ahead kind of rocking and funky.
Right. Well, it was rocking, but it was always funky, and it was always the offbeat. The integrity was there. And there's a couple of things I wanted to ask that sort of touch on that. Working with George Massenberg all those years, who was of a key part of the sound of you guys, you still maintained the integrity of the band sound, which was sort of a raw, jammy, kind of spontaneous-sounding thing. And you avoided, I guess you guys always avoided selling out with your sound. There was always that opportunity to go hardcore commercial, right? Did you have those discussions, and how did you maintain the integrity?
We always had those discussions. We thought, first and foremost, we thought, well, people should be digging on this music.
There you go. Right.
Why aren't they picking this stuff up? You know, it was, we always seemed to buck the system as far as what was popular at the time. But
right.
But we always thought, well, you know, this music is infectious. It should be, you know.
Well, did that lead to some discord with the suits at the record labels? Did they say, well, you know, that stuff
always
won't sell? Right, right, right.
Always. They, you know, at one point they asked us if we couldn't be more like the Doobie Brothers, and we went,
oh,
why would you want that? You already have the Doobie Brothers.
Wow. Unbelievable.
But in any event, it was, we kept trying to get one of those hits.
And you did. Right. You did a couple of times, and you know what? You stick with something long enough, it becomes a sound, and then what do you know? You guys turn around and reach number one on the Let It Roll record. Now, of course, we've just fast-forwarded through the career way, way beyond a lot of stuff, but you did that. And like I said, even that record, as commercially viable as it could have been, you know, like formula-wise, you guys stuck to the plan, and there you go. As a result, you ended up with a hit record, so.
Yeah, and we had to. It was like there was really no reforming the band unless the band was going to stay true to the roots of the music and to the
very well said.
The philosophy of the band itself, which was when I joined, Lowell told me there's only one rule in this band, and that is there are no rules.
Ah.
You know, we're all good players. We can pick any genre of music. We can play it. We will spin it into the sound that is ours distinctively.
Right.
And people either love it or they won't, you know.
Hats off to you. We will revisit that record later in the interview because I want to play a song from that one, and it's not the obvious one that I want to play, and I want to hear more detail about it. But first, I want to talk about life after Richie Hayward. I mean, you guys lost one of the greats, not only one of the great drummers ever, but one of the great musicians ever, and I wanted to pay tribute to him and kind of throw a curveball at you and see if you can come up with, off the top of your head, something that I might be able to find rather quickly, of something that's captured of Richie's on Forever on tape or on record, either live or studio, that you can remember that sticks out, that you just go, wow, that is my all-time favorite Richie moment.
Wow. Well, you know what? I probably would go back to, there's two intros that he played. Well, three, actually. One is the one on Fool Yourself, which is just a standard straight-ahead, you know, beat that has been sampled and used on a lot of hip-hop records, believe it or not.
Oh, wow.
The other one is the intro to Cold, 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 which to me was like the drum sound of God. It was like, oh, man, listen to that.
Well,
then I had to sort of ask him to replicate that a little bit for the intro on Old Folks Boogie.
And it's interesting that you're talking about intros. I wanted to really talk about what kind of brand of groove Richie had, which was definitely unique. Unless you know, I just don't know about a whole bunch of other drummers doing it. But to me, it sounds extremely unique. But first, let's listen to what you're talking about. An immediate reference now. You said Fool Yourself, the intro. Here's from Dixie Chicken. Let's listen to this track, and then we'll talk a little bit more about Richie's playing afterwards.
Okay.
Cause if you keep on singing the same old lines, you're gonna look mind. Watch out, girl, the words you say that don't really fit the play. Somebody else you might talk to now knows what you say and what you mean. They don't help you stand.
From Dixie Chicken, Little Feet. Paul Bérard joining us on the Bill Murphy Show as we pay tribute to Richie Hayward in this part of the interview. Perfect, perfect choice for you to roll there and just kind of listen to that groove. It's exactly what I was talking about. Now, I want to expand on that a little bit and the fact that, Richie, it seems when you listen to, and I'm a big fan of drums. I'm not a drummer myself, but I'm a huge fan of drummers, and I listen to his stuff. Now, just tell me if I don't know enough about Cajun-styled music to think that this goes on all the time, but Richie seems to like try to hit the snare everywhere except the two and the four. It's either on an and or an andy, or somewhere right before or after the three. Is that just a part of the genre that I don't know about, or was that really, really kind of brought to the next level by Richie?
I think it's a little bit of both, really. You know, when you're talking about music from Louisiana, you're always talking about syncopation.
Uh-huh.
And Richie was a master at syncopation. He got it. It was like, you know, a lot of people just, you know, they try and play it, but when they play it, it's kind of stiff and so forth. But Richie had a swing to his playing that I think that's why he was a favorite amongst a lot of drummers. You know,
now,
he wasn't classically trained. He wasn't. He was anything but normal.
He's a field guy, right.
yeah, exactly. Now, if you want to go to the other end of the spectrum, there's a song, and I can't remember which record it was on. It might have been on Feast Don't Fail Me Now, but I can't be sure. But it's called Wait Till the Shit Hits the Fan.
Right, right.
And which is a tune that's in 7.
Oh, yeah. Know? Oh, yeah.
So it's like you listen to that in his playing on that, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, it drifts, on the chorus, it drifts back to standard 4-4 and things like that. But he plays every part of the kit on that track, and he's just phenomenal.
And he always
seemed... I remember watching them trying to do it back when they were cutting sailing shoes.
Right.
And the producer, who was a Warner Brothers staff producer, was going... Well, first and foremost, I don't think we can say shit on the record, you know. And this is just way too crazy. I mean, nobody's going to want to hear this stuff, you know.
Yeah, that's too out of the ordinary, right?
Yeah, yeah. So it was to me, it was incredible. I was going, God, this is bending the time-space continuum.
Well, and I would think that stuff like that would alter your way of playing a little bit. I mean, you had to kind of adapt your groove, or was the trick to stay straight on the guitar and bass while Richie did his thing, which would cause that shift? Or did you guys all kind of do it together? There was probably a little bit of both going on, right?
I think there's a little bit of both, and needless to say, I was, you know, when I got to join Little Feet, I was all of 23, and I was basically a blues guitar player.
Right,
and,
right.
So for me, you know, I've been involved now in a 40-year education, which is...
Right. You never do stop learning, do you?
No. You know, every day is a new experience, which is wonderful.
Richie, rest in peace. It's got to be a different, I'm sure the live experience with you guys has always been great, but it's just got to be, I don't know, a bittersweet thing to be back on the stage now, but not having Richie back there.
It is, and it is. I got to tell you, we've been in the studio recording another studio record recently.
Oh, man, awesome.
And the kid that we got to play drums was Richie's drum tech, Gabriel Ford, who happens to be Robin Ford's nephew.
Oh, wow.
So when we, when we were looking for drummers and so forth, Gabe said, you know, I've been listening to the book now for 2.5 years. I think I can cover it. It won't be Richie, but it'll be solid. So, you know, we had a conversation with Robin, who he's played with and so forth, and Robin said, he's funky as a goat. He can cover it, you know. So he shines wonderfully on this new record. We've been very fortunate in the fact that Little Feet has this sort of family feeling to it. And so rather than going out and hiring 5 different drummers to play all the different styles, you
right.
know, we got really lucky that, you know, here's a kid who's, you know, he's not really even a kid. He's 38 years old. For the rest of us, he's just a kid.
Yeah.
So, and he's stepped up and just, he's been, you know, a godsend.
No, and it's part of the family, and it's someone you've been on the road with before, so there's a comfort level there, I'm sure, which made it a whole lot easier. Well, that's great, and I'm so glad that we were able to pay some tribute to Richie and remember him. And just want to remind everybody before we move on, these guys are going to be on the road. If you're in the Northeast, it's like the New England, New York area, Pennsylvania. This is December 30th through mid-January. And then there's the Feet Fan Fest excursions, or the Feet Fan Excursion dates that are happening in Jamaica. That's like a regular thing. It's become a tradition. And that's
this is our 10th anniversary.
Amazing. And that's where the fans get to see you guys a number of times in a few days. Which leads me to the next subject, which is the jam band thing. Now, you've been part of Phil Lesh and Friends. You've done the whole jam band thing. But I think Little Feet now in the evolution did more of it back in the day and less of it now. I mean, of course, when you do a show now, there's so much demand for so many songs that you're really doing more songs. So is it like a sort of a reverse thing? Little Feet was more of a jam band back then and less now. Meanwhile, everyone is sort of gravitating to the jam band thing more today. I mean, there's a whole generation of fans that appreciate it. But you guys have sort of, you know, been there, done that as far as that goes, right?
Well, yeah. I remember when we first put the band back together in the 80s and late 80s, that we would have, you know, an hour and a half, 2-hour set list, and it would have like 25, 26 songs. Then I remember I went out with Phil, and when I would do 5 songs for 2.5 hours.
Amazing.
So then, basically, it's kind of a combination of it all. What I love to do musically is improvise. Little Feet affords the opportunity on almost every song that we do to do that.
Even within the original structure of the song, which is great.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And so, you know, there are still extended solos, but we kind of get to the point where we feel like, well, you know, if you're going to say something, say something. If you're going to noodle, forget about it.
Right,
you know?
Right, right.
So, the jams aren't quite as long, but you can definitely have enough time to make a statement.
Right, and so it's more of a, there's a time and a place for it, and when you do, it's got to be something special, right?
Sure.
And it almost always is. So, and also because you have such dedicated hardcore fans that come see you night after night and follow you city to city, there's almost been a necessity to change up the set list every night. And I know that from reading some recent news from you guys and feedback from the fans that you still do that. But have you ever stumbled upon a set or a section of a set where you said, you know what, we got to stick with that, you know, for a little while and do it two nights in a row?
Well, it's not so much a set, but there are songs that we can't get away with dropping. Dixie Chicken, for instance, everybody wants to hear that every night. Well, not everybody. The people that follow us constantly go, God, do you have to play that damn chicken song again?
Yeah, meanwhile, meanwhile, people were dragging me to Dave Matthews concerts all the time, and they did everything but their two biggest hits, and that really sort of annoyed me because I was there to see those songs, you know?
Yeah, I can understand that. And, you know, you got to kind of create a balance, really, of, you know, trying to satisfy as many people as you possibly can.
Right.
You know, and, you know, the way that we do the Dixie Chicken Willin', or Fat Man in the Bathtub, for instance. It's always different.
Yeah.
Night. So.
Especially, you know, at the end when the song starts climaxing and you're going, all right, 8 more bars. Come on, let's go. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to move on and play you something that is one of my favorite cuts. And again, we revisit this Let It Roll record, 1988. The one that, you know, I hate to use the term put you on the map because it most certainly did not put you on the map. You had been well established, but sort of brought you into that top 40 realm, and there was people at parties becoming a standard, and Hate to Lose Your Lovin' was the obvious big hit on there. Let It Roll did a pretty nice number, but the song that I was thinking about was One Clear Moment, the second song track on the album, which actually did chart at number 10, and it was some a few months later after the other two had hit. And it really hit me as a very underappreciated song by you guys. Talk a little bit about how One Clear Moment came and what's the story behind that song, and then I want to play it for everybody.
Wow, that's far out. The impetus for that song really was we were sitting around trying to write songs for the record, and I think somebody just kind of blurted out, you know, what we need is one clear moment here to focus and so forth. And went, one clear moment, you know.
Wow. So. It's amazing how spontaneously stuff like that comes up sometimes.
So. Yeah, and then, you know, you build a story around it about, you know, a guy sees a girl, you know, wants to dance, you know. It was really kind of built on a commercial idea, if you will.
Right.
But yeah, with a, you know, a kind of a fractured little feet groove.
And here it is. Let's check out One Clear Moment, another perfect example of Richie's offbeats. It's hard to find where the snare is. It's Little Feet with Paul Barrère on The Bill Murphy Show.
Just
Uh-huh. One Clear Moment, Little Feet. This is my favorite part of the show, is that I get to play some of my favorite songs and then hear it from the horse's mouth about how the songs were created. And another great story behind that one, and a definite great moment for you guys. And again, I guess we could talk a little bit about that beat. It's just something that Richie would create on the spot, and you would just like kind of fall into it, like, oh yeah. Or did you?
That was definitely him. Listening to the groove that the guitars are playing, and just playing off of them, if you will.
Right.
And for years when Lowe was alive, Lowe would direct Richie in that fashion. You know,
he'd right.
go, okay, put your foot here, put your left hand here. You know. It was almost like that, you know, that antique Trogs tape that goes around. You know, split your hands and all that stuff.
It's great.
And so I think after years and years of having that kind of craziness drilled into him, he just came up with this stuff on his own. And
yeah. Well, it's awesome, and it's been really great time. I keep thinking back here in the back of my head about something you said earlier. You were talking about a song, and then said, I forget what record that's on. And it must be something to look back at your career and realize that your body of work is so deep that it takes a few minutes to kind of remember what song was on what album.
It's, I was, strange but true, I was driving with my two daughters yesterday. We were going into Hollywood to do some Christmas shopping and so forth. And I was listening to, I had my iPod into my daughter's car, right? And she's driving, and I'm jumping around between, Fred McDowell and something more crazy like Bill Frisell and stuff. And they're looking at me like I'm from outer space.
Well, I was going to say, what an education they're getting. That's great.
And then I played them Bo Diddley's Say Man, and the smiles on their faces was unbelievable. They said, I can't believe this. When was this made? I said, this was made like in the early 60s, And they said, God, it's like the Far Side's Your Mama, only except cleaner,
Yeah, said, you know what?
Said, yeah. Exactly. And they're playing the dozens, So it was, when you have that much history and it's all floating around in the back of your brain, you kind of go, oh, wait, I got something. Here, check this out. No.
Right.
What was this? I don't know. It's like I'm becoming that old guy on the golf course, with the bucket hat, with the two iron. Watch out.
Yeah, and sometimes you get to a point where you're like, I can't believe I didn't play this for you years ago. I can't believe I didn't remember that I even loved this song. Sometimes we forget about songs we loved because it's the history is so deep. Okay, now you mentioned golf a little bit. I know you had a little bit of some surgery, and are you getting back into golfing shape or not?
Not yet. They say don't hit any balls until February. I had the surgery at the beginning of, actually just before Thanksgiving.
Okay.
So they said, 6 weeks, you can start playing the guitar, so I've been starting to play the guitar.
Well, obviously, that's...
Everybody's going to come and see us play. So they're probably going to be happy to hear.
Yeah.
And, I'm not going real fast with the golf clubs yet because there is something I need to do first before I can play golf, and that is play the guitar. So.
How insensitive of me to wonder whether you were ready to play golf rather than ask you whether you were ready to play your guitar.
I'm dying out here because we've had nice weather and I can't get out and play, and Kenny will call me up and go, oh, man, I just walked the course.
Rubbing it in your face, I'm sure.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Paul Barrere, thank you so much for joining us from California and sharing some Little Feet stories. I know we really just touched upon the history. And, honestly, if we can make some time when you get back to California with some downtime, I'd love to do some more.
I would love to, too. I'll be back, at the beginning of February, and we'll be here mixing the record. So any one of those mornings for, all month in February, maybe we can hook them up.
I'm going to hold you to it. Folks, check it out. Thanks so much for sharing the show. If you're just learning about Little Feet, it's our pleasure to do that for you. So check it out and go to iTunes, like I said, sample all their stuff and start downloading that library. Paul, hang on for just a second before I say goodbye to you, wrap things up here. Everybody have a great holiday season. We'll be sure to get a couple more shows on for you before the new year. And then all new shows to look forward to in 2012. I wish I could tell you what they are now, but I don't want to let the cat out of the bag and jinx it. Paul, thanks again.
Hey, thanks so much, Bill. Happy holidays to you all and all your listeners.
You got it, brother.
All right.
Tune in again next time at BillMurphyShow.com, and thanks for sharing, everyone.
subscribe to the Bill Murphy Show podcast for free at iTunes. You can post comments about today's show, listen to archived episodes, and like the show on Facebook by visiting BillMurphyShow.com. A presentation of Bill Murphy Productions.